News Radio KOTA at 1380 AM and 100.7 FM. Well, just as promised, U.S. Senator Mike Rounds joins us on the phone this afternoon. Are you there, sir?
Good afternoon. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you.
Oh, it's very good to have you back on the show. Appreciate it. Appreciate it. Now, recently, just on Sunday, President Trump tweeted that he won't support a fix for DACA. That's the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. Trump also vowed to end DACA in September, giving Congress right around 6 months to come up with a fix. What is your position on the DACA issue, Senator Rounds?
Well, I think it's part of the bigger issue of how we take care of finding more people to work within the United States. And I think in this particular case, the DACA stands for these kids that came over here with their parents. Their parents brought them in illegally, but the kids didn't have much to do with it. Some of them serve in the military today. Most of them have no other home except here in the United States. I think President Trump early on had indicated an interest in trying to find a way forward. He also wants to build the wall. I actually worked with people on both sides of the aisle early on to find some middle ground to try to get the president his wall, and that would have been $25 billion, and also to basically find a way forward with the DACA children without giving any sort of leeway to the parents who had committed the crimes and brought them in the first place. We thought we had something pretty good, but really within about a day or so before we were voting on it, the White House came out and said that they really weren't interested in doing it at this time. They weren't in favor of that proposal. And, without the president supporting it, it really isn't going to go anyplace. We did get 54 votes for the measure anyway, which I think was a good sign that there is an interest in trying to find a way forward on the issue of revising and reforming immigration. But most certainly, we've got to have the president's support with whatever we do on it. And I still think there's a way to do both, to provide the resources to build the wall. In this particular case, it would have fully appropriated the $25 billion, but fully appropriated it over the 10 years as he had requested. But it wouldn't have had to have gone back through the appropriations process, which I thought was a good deal. But we got 54 votes. We needed 60. And if the president does decide at some point that he's ready to come back in and to look at either DACA or the wall again, and I think he will. I think right now he's negotiating. I think he's trying to find the position that gives him the ability to negotiate with Democrats and Republicans as well. And once he decides where he wants to go with it, then I think we should be able to move forward once again with DACA. But we really do have to find a way forward on it. These youngsters can be a real asset to our country, and it would be a real shame if people that are serving in the armed forces right now would be forced to leave our country.
Do you feel that the kids involved with DACA, that they should be allowed to, given an automatic path to citizenship?
Not automatic. They should be allowed a legal residency status, which is what our bill did. But then it also allowed them to pursue citizenship like they could if they had a legal status to begin with. So they'd still have to go through the process. It would take about 10 years before they could actually apply for their citizenship. But I thought it was a pretty fair approach to take with these youngsters. And like I say, they couldn't, anybody with a record, a criminal record or anything, it wouldn't apply to. But I think it was a step in the right direction to address the issue and at the same time find some more people that we need right now in the United States to go to work.
Now, just to confirm, the DACA does not apply to new individuals coming into the country?
No, that's correct. And in fact, that's one of the areas where we looked at different dates as to how to make it effective for where to go after people that were trying to sneak in and where we could put additional emphasis on going after people who are trying to get in to take advantage of it. But it is correct that in this particular case, DACA does not apply to new people coming in. It's basically people that have been here for quite a while, beginning back in 2012, I believe was the date.
What do you think about concerning the president wanting the wall built and the whole DACA thing? If there's no trade-off or an agreement that can be made on those two issues, what do you think about the president's so-called nuclear option in the Senate to make it so you only need 51 votes to get anything done?
Well, even getting 51 votes is a challenge in the Senate, because we've only got, right now we've got 50 senators that are able to come in and work that are Republican. And so even if we go to 51 or force the issue to go to 51, and it would take all of the support of every single Republican to do that, and right now that does not exist. But even then, to get most things done, it wouldn't be as easy as it sounds. So I guess most senators, Republicans and Democrats alike, would like to see the Senate work better than what it does today. But we think there are some other ways to do that. In part, the biggest challenge is that in the Senate, in order to do anything, you have to have unanimous consent. And that's always been the way that the Senate has worked. The idea was that it would be a place where you would take your time, work your way through issues. Unfortunately, over the last 200 years, it's gotten to the point where, as the size of the Senate has grown, if you have one person out of 100 that says, I don't want to do anything, they could then slow down the work of the Senate and not get anything done for the country. And so over a period of time, they actually created these cloture votes, as they called them, which said even if somebody doesn't want to do it, if we have enough of us, then we should be able to move forward. And at first, the cloture was, I think, like 90, and then it was like 75, and then they moved it to, I think, 65, and then now, as it is now, to 60 members of the Senate. And so over a period of time, the cloture process was actually designed to speed the process up, not slow it down. What's happened is that as partisan as things have been, not only in D.C., but in a lot of places across the country, it's been more difficult to get the 60 votes to do cloture. And even when we do get the 60 votes, under Senate rules, there still is a slowdown time or a cool-off time in which you have to have one intervening day between the cloture vote and the time that you actually vote on the issue at hand. And there is a motion, there is a movement right now on the part of some Republicans and some Democrats to take away that intervening day, to basically allow us to, if we do have a cloture motion and we agree to it, that particularly for nominations, we should be able to do it with only 8 hours of debate rather than 30 hours, as an example, or something along that line. Those negotiations are going on right now, and I really think we're going to have a better chance of getting something like that done in the Senate than by doing what they call the nuclear option, where you go back to just a 51-vote margin. And part of that is because Mitch McConnell, who's been around for a long, long time, and a number of other Republicans who have been around for a long time, will tell you that Democrats control the Senate actually traditionally more years than what Republicans do. And they say, you know, it has saved this country a number of problems in the past by making the two parties work together. And they're not really sure that it's a good thing for the country long term to go to a 51-vote margin in the United States Senate at this time.
How do you feel about the proposed census question asking if somebody is a citizen or not on the upcoming 2020 census?
Personally, I didn't realize that we didn't do that already. I think it's good to do it. I don't think there's anything wrong with finding out whether or not you are talking to a citizen or if you're talking to someone who is not a citizen. And just because they're not a citizen doesn't mean that they're necessarily here illegally. They might have a legal status here. They might be here on a visa program. But it would be good to know that as you're going through and doing the census. Because when we start talking about a census and we look at how we divide up the votes and the money that's being sent out, most of us have always assumed that that was being distributed based upon the number of citizens that we had in an area, not necessarily on the number of people who were there who were from outside the country.
Now, a lot of people in the that voted for the GOP in the last election are upset concerning the recently passed omnibus bill. Some people just saying, hey, when's the party going to go back to being fiscally conservative? How would you respond to that?
Well, first of all, let me just share that there is no such thing as a perfect bill. In this particular case, an omnibus bill applies to the Department of Defense and to what they call the non-defense discretionary funding, not the mandatory funding. The total of these two bills amounts to about a $1.3 trillion expenditure out of a total expenditure of about $4.3 to $4.4 trillion. So the vast majority of the budget that we're talking about as it goes up is on autopilot. And this had nothing to do with the parts that are on autopilot. That's Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and interest on the debt. So about $700 billion of the $1.3 trillion, so a little over half, went to defense. Personally, this was one of the goals that I had when I was elected to the Senate. I wanted to see more money going into the defense of our country. It was critical that we start in that direction. So for me personally, I think that part of the omnibus was a victory for those of us in the central part of the country that care about the defense of our nation. After about 10 years of underfunding, we are now slowly starting to get the Defense Department's budget to move up faster than the non-defense discretionary. This particular omnibus actually took the first steps in doing so. The second part is that just because we put money into the accounts that are in the discretionary side does not necessarily mean that the executive branch has to spend all of that money. And right now, we're having discussions with Mick Mulvaney and others about how they want to spend and where they will spend the money. The other part of this is that some of those areas where we actually had the expenditures, some of them were good expenditures in South Dakota. One example that I talk about is that we care deeply about our veterans. This has funding for our veteran systems in it. It also included a 2.4% pay increase for our troops. That's the largest single payer increase that we've had in over a decade. It's also provided under the Department of Defense for the new weapon systems that we need to counter not just ISIS, but North Korea and China and Russia's development as well. And finally, the omnibus does more than just spend money. It's one of the few bills that, as it passes, brings some things along with it. We were able to fix an important part of the tax measure that had to do with our farmers so that farmers could participate in co-ops and get a discount, but that they also we also fixed it so that there was an equalization between co-ops and non-co-op ag businesses that could have, if it wasn't fixed, could have put some non-co-op ag businesses out of business, and it was critical that we fixed that. But we also fixed a deal with the Environmental Protection Agency called the Farm Act, where we basically, and this is one that it started with a bill that Deb Fisher from Nebraska had, and I co-sponsored it with her, and that would have been designed to make sure and make it clear that the EPA could not basically get in and start managing and doing oversight on ag emissions, manure, in other words. And what had happened is we had a court determination that said that the EPA, based upon the language that was in the original legislation, that the EPA should have been monitoring and regulating ag emissions on farms. That would have been a terrible thing to have happen. And in fact, it would have required the Coast Guard to actually be in and monitoring places in South Dakota. The Farm Act is included in this particular legislation where we exclude farm waste emissions and so forth from being subject to EPA oversight. And then it also fixed another piece that was really important for South, or actually two more pieces for South Dakota. It included coverage for H-2B visas. That's that we put in about 69,000 additional ones. These are the people that come in from out of the country.
Unfortunately, I do have to cut you off there, Senator. I apologize.
Okay.
Thank you so much for visiting with us.
It's a long story, but there's more good in it than bad.
Okay.
Not perfect, but definitely moving in the right direction.
Thank you so much.
All right. Catch you later, Ian.
Bye. All right, that was today's Focus feature with U.S. Senator Mike Rounds.